Hello and welcome to Press TV's debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, a meeting of the leaders of some of the world's strongest economies have been held in Canada. Some call it the G7, others call it the G6 plus one. And then there's a proposal that it should be the G8. Well, regardless of the name, it has been a gathering that U.S. President Donald Trump has shaken up by not backing down from his trade tariffs on his allies. What does it all mean? We'll stay with us as we take a look at it all on this debate.
The leaders of Canada, the U.S., the U.K., France, Italy, Japan and Germany have gathered in the Canadian town of Lamalois in Quebec for the annual G7 summit. This year's gathering, however, has seen a wedge between the traditional allies over a number of issues, including trade tariffs and Russia. A major source of contention is U.S. President Donald Trump's unilaterally imposed tariffs on steel and aluminum imports, a move which has sparked anger among U.S. allies and has stoked fears of a trade war.
Canada will not change its mind when it comes to the illegal and absolutely unjustified application of tariffs on steel and aluminum, not only coming from Canada, but on the steel and aluminum sold by all the G7 allies who are assembled here.
Trump drove the wedge, splitting Washington from its allies even deeper with a spontaneous call for Russia to be readmitted to the G7 club. But the EU members in Canada were quick to voice their opposition, saying the decision to expel Russia in 2014 was right.
During the European coordination, the topic of Russia played an issue, and we agreed that a return by Russia to the G7 format cannot happen as long as there isn't any substantial progress in regard to the problems with Ukraine.
Some experts say the U.S. administration's foreign policy is only weakening Washington's relations with its European and other allies.
It's interesting that this is happening at the same time that we've angered a lot of our trading partners, especially in Europe, by pulling out of the Iranian deal and are threatening them with secondary sanctions. If Trump had designed purposefully to start breaking our ties with Europe, I don't think he could be doing a better job.
The U.S. president's strict policies against Washington's traditional allies and the split among G7 members is only reinforcing predictions that this year's summit might be the first such gathering to end without an agreed joint statement.
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program, publisher op-ed news.com, Rob Call, out of Philadelphia, and American Institute for Foreign Policy member, Michael Lane, out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. Well, let's start this off with Michael in D.C. What is your take on this divide between the United States and the other six countries?
Well, it certainly was a different or continues to be a different G7 meeting than they've been in the past. I mean, historically, and I guess this is about a 30-year-old or 40, almost a 40-year-old process. These meetings have been low-key, they've been boring, they haven't generated much press, and this is the first time where G7 has totally and completely dominated the headlines from before it happened until after it's finished. I'm sure it'll continue for the next two or three days. Donald Trump is on a mission to change the trading parameters of the United States vis-a-vis its partners. Many of our agreements were negotiated back in the days when the United States was by far the strongest economy in the world, and we were willing to give away perhaps a 45 to 55 kind of deal in an effort to assist our friends instead of a 50-50 deal that benefited both economies equally. Well, everyone's gone along with that, and Donald Trump has finally come in and said no. This is going to stop. We're going to have a 50-50 deal, or we're not going to have a deal at all. By way of example, quickly, Canada's average tariff on imports is 2.7%. The European Union's average tariff on imports is 3%. The United States' average tariff on imports is 2.4%. So as you can see, we're getting the bad part of that deal all the way around. I think President Trump really changed the whole dynamic this morning in his departing press conference. when he walked in front of the cameras and he said, what I really want to do is let's just eliminate all barriers to trade. Let's get rid of tariffs, let's get rid of regulations, let's get rid of this and that, and let's just have free trade all the way along. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out, particularly in the final communique that will come out of the summit when it ends sometime this afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Well, your take, Rob, on all of this, and of course, Trump's suggestion about total free trade.
Thanks for having me here.
Thanks
by
for
the
being
way.
With us.
Trump is hello.
Go ahead, please.
Trump is an example of the movie that came out about 10 years ago called Idiocracy. This is kind of the sequel to that. And Trump is so simple-minded, I don't trust him to negotiate any kind of a trade deal. We need to fix the trade deals that we have. They're bad for the middle class. They're bad for most of the people in the world. They're great for corporations, transnational corporations, but they're terrible for cultures and communities.
Okay.
The problem is Trump is going to make a deal that is good for some of his friends, maybe whoever he talks to the last conversation. And the fact is that he is doing things in a really crazy way that is consistent, at least crazy and stupid. And It's a very frustrating thing to see how what happened there at the G7 was he embarrassed the United States again, and he continued to deteriorate the reputation of the United States. He continues to make the United States a less trustworthy business partner and a diplomatic partner, and that's really a dangerous thing. As far as Ukraine goes, it's complicated. I have no great liking for Ukraine. And I have been accused, my site has been accused by Propernot as being favoring Russia, although I don't like what has been happening with Trump and Russia. It's a complicated story, and the problem is Trump doesn't do complicated. For one thing that nobody is talking about is the reason that Trump left the G7 summit early is because the last thing they're talking about is the climate accord. So he walked out so he wouldn't even have to deal with it. God forbid he should get some information that gets him straight on the facts.
Okay. Well, Michael, what's your take? Yeah, you heard Rob talk about how Donald Trump is behaving. Now, some say it's part of the madman theory that actually Trump is playing this game basically to play hardball with whomever he is talking to, and he comes off as an individual who would do anything at any time, but it's all very calculated. Your take on that?
I buy that, and let me tell you why. Look, what the president, he's certainly a different kind of diplomat. He's a disruptor. He's trying to disrupt the G7 the way they normally do business. He's trying to disrupt the world economic order in the way it trades and things like that. And the way you do that is by going further out on a limb than what your true objectives are in the beginning. Well, Donald Trump does not want these tariffs, I don't believe. In fact, he said he doesn't want these tariffs. But key to Donald Trump's diplomacy is that his adversaries, or in this case, our friends, have to believe that he is willing to go through with those tariffs if he doesn't get what he wants in terms of renegotiated trade deals that are more fair to the United States. Now, trade wars never help anyone. Trade wars, in fact, hurt everyone. But when you look at the massive scale of the U.S. economy versus our trading partners and things like that, it's clear that our trading partners will be hurt more than the United States will be hurt if this devolves into a full-fledged trade war. Therefore, Donald Trump wants everybody to believe that he's absolutely serious about going forward with these tariffs, And he's using that as the stick and the pressure on our trading partners to get them to come to the table and to negotiate a more fair deal all the way around. The downside to this approach, of course, is that if you want the world to believe that you're really going to go through with it, and someone pretends that it's a bluff and they're going to call you your bluff, you have to go through with it. You have no choice at that point.
Well, Rob, Trump has said that no longer will he allow for the United States to be taken advantage of when it comes to trade. Do you think that Washington has been taken advantage of?
I don't think so. I think Washington made deals that were good for the companies that back the politicians that pass and approve the trade deals. Washington did exactly what it wanted to do. And I don't think that Trump is trying to change any of that. I think that Trump is going by his book. He wrote the Art of the Deal. And it's a simple-minded book with simple-minded ideas that a teenager in a bazaar would know all about. And it makes it so that his moves are predictable and expectable by anybody who's dealing with him. The problem is that he's so dumb. Literally, he is a moron, as people around him have described, like Rex Tillerson, that he thinks that he's being so smart. He's like Dr. Evil or some, I can do it, yes. He's a joke. He's a joke, and the world is laughing at him. And I don't believe at all there's any kind of three-dimensional chess going on. This is a kind of a myth, some kind of a fantasy that authoritarian people who are dying to have somebody rescue them, all these angry people who voted for him, he's not going to rescue them. He's shown that he is betraying them. He is doing things that are totally against their interest. And that's what we can expect to come from this.
Okay, well, Michael, I mean, regardless of what is said, he is the president of the United States, and people did vote for him. At this point in time, now there are some analysts
that say what
Trump is doing, his anti-NAFTA and potential trade war moves, that he's actually declaring war against the globalists. Your take on that side of things?
Well, I think in a certain sense you can say that accurately, that he is declaring war against the globalists. But he's not against the global economy, and he's not against international trade. What he wants is fair trade for the United States. And as my colleague correctly pointed out, the United States entered willingly over the last 50, 70 years into these agreements with our trading partners that disadvantaged the United States, and we were perfectly willing to do so because we wanted to advantage our partners and give them a hand up. Well, that was fine in the post-World War II economy. That was even fine in the 50s and 60s economy. But now that we're in almost 2020, there's a new world economic order, and the United States no longer needs to take that position. So Donald Trump is trying to change it to make our trading relationships a 50-50 relationship. And I don't blame our trading partners for resisting that. They have a good deal. They have an advantage. Why would they voluntarily give it up? The answer is they wouldn't. They're going to fight, but ultimately they're going to realize it's in their best economic interest to play ball with the President of the United States.
Well, Rob, the U.S. President has said that the group should also consist of Russia, which was, of course, previously part of the organization, which was the G8. Tell me your perspective on that side of things. Do you think that Russia should be part of this group?
Probably yes. Probably yes. I would probably agree with Trump on that. The complaints that they have about the Ukraine, I don't buy all of them. And I think that Russia is too powerful a player not to be in these conversations.
And Michael, so at the same time of the G7 meeting, eight other countries are meeting on the other side of the world, the Shanghai Cooperation Council, which of course, includes Russia, China, India, and five other countries. But tell me about that. Do you think that the G7 is somewhat waning and entities such as the SCC are on the rise? And could it ultimately be a rival?
Well, first, let me address the question you just asked to Rob first, which was the readmission of Russia into the G7 to make it a G8. And, you know, it's a balance here. Do you continue the punishment against Russia for annexing the Crimea? Or do you overlook that, say, look, this hasn't gotten us any place. We need to really engage with Russia, and this is a perfect forum, platform on which to engage with Russia. It's a very close call, I think. My colleague said that he would be in favor of readmitting Russia. I think I'm on balance slightly on the other side. If Russia was dismissed from the G8 down to the G7 for what the West considered to be malbehavior in the Crimea and Ukraine, then something has to change before you can readmit them, and nothing has changed. So in this case, I would tend to disagree with President Trump, and I think Chancellor Merkel had the soundbite when she said, you know, until there's progress on these issues, we're fine. Now, is the G7 the all to end all in terms of economic activity? Well, for right now, yes, it is. Will it always be the case? Obviously, there are economies that are expanding, doing much better. There are rival organizations that you just mentioned that are now meeting to discuss their world viewpoint on things. It's an emerging competition to the G7. But right now, when you look at the amount of economic activity controlled by G7 member countries, it's anywhere, you know, they control, I think, about 75% of the nation's wealth, about 50% of economic activity, and about 40% of global GDP. That's, you know, any other combination of countries is a long way away before they pose a threat to that.
Okay, well, Rob, do you think that we're headed for a major schism between these traditional allies? And if so, what could that mean?
I think that we are in the middle of that happening, and I think it's because of Trump. I don't think it's because he's got some brilliant plan. I think it's because he is a malignant narcissist who doesn't have a clue what he's doing and is not willing to listen to people. He has surrounded himself with incompetence, a team of incompetence. And that's all he's going to be able to get, because he has shown that he is like the scorpion hitching a ride on the back of the frog across the river. He can't help himself but to hurt the people he works with. So the only people he has left to get to work for him are people who are as predatory and simple-minded as he is. I mean, look at his new chief counsel, Rudy Giuliani. He is the biggest joke you can imagine. And that's what we're going to see. By the way, one thing that Michael mentioned twice was about how the U.S. is at a disadvantage, and he cited some percentages where there's a fraction of 1% difference in the tariffs. Well, the fact is that the U.S. dollar is what all of these countries use to trade on. And having the dollar as the unit of trade is worth probably more than 2 or 3 percentage points. It's huge. And we know that because when a country decides to leave the dollar, they put themselves at risk of being attacked and destroyed, with the leaders murdered when they get rid of the dollar. So I think that that's a part of the equation that has to be included in these tariffs.
Well, Michael, now with the situation as is, if it continues, do you expect more tension in general between these countries? And economically, could this be disruptive to these countries and perhaps even the United States itself?
Well, it could go either way. I believe that President Trump would hope that our trading partners sooner rather than later realize that they're going to have to agree with him at some point in some measure. They don't have to give him 100% of what he's asking for. But if that doesn't happen sooner rather than later, if we devolve down into something of a trade war, then I think you're looking at a great deal of disruption, and I think you're looking at disruption both among the, well, really in the total world economy, including the United States. At some point, people have to understand that we don't want to do that, and cooler heads have to come together and say, okay, here's where we're going to come out with our compromise. This is really what's going to work. I believe that President Trump is willing to compromise, even if he won't say that he's willing to compromise. But ultimately, I am so intrigued by his proposal this morning where he floated the idea of let's just get rid of all barriers to trade. Boy, would I love to see that. And I didn't hear him say it, but I expect he was talking only about the largest of the industrialized countries. He's not talking about the smaller economies of the world, because for the same reason the United States has antitrust laws, there are some protections that are needed for the smaller economies.
All right, and Rob, your take, where's all of this going? 30 seconds.
I think it's going to hurt the American people. It's going to hurt farmers who are exporting to Europe. It's going to hurt people who work with solar cells. That's already hurt them and cost hundreds of thousands of jobs. When you have an idiocracy in the White House, what you have is chaos. And it's what Trump is going to end up doing is he's going to back off. He's going to make a deal from something that was probably already offered to him by the parties involved. And he's going to make like he created this brilliant solution. And it just doesn't work that way. You have to know that Trump is a chronic liar who lies multiple times every day. He can't help himself.
And on that note, so sorry, we're out of time. I appreciate you both being with us. Publisher op-ednews.com, Rob Call out of Philadelphia, and from the American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane out of Washington, D.C. Thank you both for being with us. And as always, viewers, we appreciate you being with us on Another Debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. See you next time.